National Wire Service. In addition, we have the Armed Forces Radio and Television Service feed from Washington, D.C. These are worldwide networks. This stuff is fed to us by radio teletype. And then when it comes here from these three sources, the wire services, then we compile this material, editing where necessary, making the story more brief than what it might already be, depending upon our needs for that particular story, or how much news we actually need to fill out our newscast. Television, it requires a little different preparation, whereas you need only a single copy as far as radio is concerned, and in television, we need duplicate copies. So many times this will entail rewriting a story in some instances. If a story is good as it is, perhaps we'll use it as it is. But the script must be prepared in duplicate at that time so that the director will have a copy of the story which you are reading and in the order in which you are reading. So for television, it's a little double preparation, you might say that. As far as the video portion of television is concerned, we need various audio or visual material to support these different newscasts. We have the photo slide service. We have, in addition to that, the motion picture film footage we get from ABC. We get from CBS. We have the videotape recordings that we lift from the Walter Cronkite Show back in the States. And these are all incorporated to give you visual support of what would ordinarily be an otherwise dry newscast with just one man sitting on camera for 15 or 20 minutes.
The AFVN News staff is headed up by a branch chief, an Army captain. His deputy is the NCOIC News, Marine Master Sergeant Jim Kaiser. Despite their military rank, their functions are largely those of a managing editor and his deputy in the stateside network. But there are differences in Vietnam. People and policies, mostly. Jim Kaiser explains.
We have two sides to the staffing. We have the network news branch here at the Saigon headquarters station. And we have our news departments at each of the upcountry detachments. Now, from the radio news standpoint, it is truly a network function with AFVN. The radio news that is broadcast out of Saigon is heard upcountry through AFVN at exactly the same time. We are electronically linked as a network on the radio side. However, from the television standpoint, the television news that we put out here in Saigon is seen in the Saigon area. Then the film, the slides, are sent to all of our detachments, all at the same time, by a special courier plane. And they, in turn, make up their own newscasts at the local detachments. So they each have their own news department. Of course, the news policy for AFVN is very basically that the American servicemen here in Vietnam are entitled to the same news that the American public back in the States receives, and that the servicemen here should receive this news just as fast as possible, as close to the time that it actually happens as we can possibly do it. Now, the one area that is sensitive is, of course, with the Vietnam news. We do not air any news stories that would be of any military value. We get our news on the Vietnam scene from the same sources that the major networks and the major news services get. We cover the MACV briefings. We get it from the wire services. And we go from there. All of our Vietnam news is verified before we use it. We don't use speculative stories, and we don't use hearsay type items. It has to be verified by a qualified and recognized reputable news source before we'll use it on the air.
In SP-857, và hiện bây giờ vẫn còn tiếp diễn.
We have one more item to add to our release of today. That's a delay report from Bien Hoa. At 10:15 yesterday morning, one Army Marine battalion contacted an estimated one enemy company.
Jim spoke of briefings. This is the most important one. Every afternoon in Saigon, spokesmen of the Vietnamese government and American military spokesmen meet the news media. It's the joint United States Public Affairs Office press briefing, referred to irreverently as the 5 o'clock follies, an account of significant events in the Republic of Vietnam during the preceding 24 hours. It is the prime source of AFVN war news. Three television sportscasts are aired daily, six on radio. In addition, major stateside sporting events, the World Series, the big bowl games, are carried live on radio and after a short delay on television. Sports is a subsection of AFVN News, but a very independent and proud subsection. And the four sportscasters feel they're a special breed. One of them, Air Force Tech Sergeant Ray Williams, tells why.
Sports is more on an upbeat type tempo, in my estimation. You can be straightforward, but you don't have to be quite as serious in sports as you do in news. And it takes a person with a good background in sports, a good background, and I guess a feeling for sports. See, you have to like sports to be able to do it. If you don't like sports, you just can't really get it across to the people that here it is and throw it at them. You have to really say, look, I like it. I know you like it.
News, sports, special coverage. The recently completed Apollo moon landing is a good example of special coverage. It was also a first for AFVN television. The events of Apollo were seen in Saigon and in many other parts of Vietnam the same day they occurred. Parenthetically, they were also seen in Thailand and at sea at Yankee Station. Army Sergeant First Class Bob MacArthur of AFVN News was the anchor man in Saigon for Apollo.
Well, a lot of people and a lot of equipment were used to provide our up-to-the-minute coverage of the Apollo 11 moon landing. The pictures came to us from a very long chain that began with a satellite pickup in the Philippines, where there they made videotape copies right off the air. The Air Force Scatback Detachment from here made special daily flights to get these VTRs for us, and they'd be in the Philippines about the time the VTR was completed. They'd be airborne and back to Saigon and have the film at AFVN within, maybe 2.5 or 3 hours of the time the event actually occurred. Usually we wait at least a week to get our video or picture coverage of any event, but in this case, we got it a lot faster, right there the same day. And once we had the VTR in our hands, it was a simple matter to provide an introduction and then show the tape, giving our viewers the fastest coverage possible for the Far East.
We of AFVN are pretty proud of the Apollo coverage. On the whole, it went very well. But there were moments. Bob MacArthur again.
For instance, the day of the moonwalk was a good example of a bad goof, because we expected the VTR before about 7 p.m. that evening. So we set 7 as the time to go on the air. What we didn't reckon on was the weather, and of course, Tan Sanut was socked in with a bad rainstorm at that time. The plane carrying our VTR had to be rerouted to Cameron Bay, and it's about a 45-minute flight. So we still figured the film would be here about 7:30 at the latest, so we made the decision to go ahead and go on the air and what we call fill time, just take-up time, and explain a little background and perhaps show a couple of films for about half an hour. That tape didn't actually get to the station until 8 o'clock that evening. So from 7:30 to 8, I had to just sit there on camera and talk about whatever came into my head. I had no prepared script. All I had was the things that I had read and remembered about the entire Apollo 11 mission and some of the logistics behind it. So I sat there and it tried to explain it all over and over and over and over again. Well, it came off okay, considering the circumstances, but in the, sitting there in the television studio without the air conditioning, which was out, and those hot lights, and the entire staff, it seemed, was standing there in the control room, and I could see them through the glass, and everybody saying stretch and talk and yak, and what they didn't realize is that I was slowly dehydrating under the lights and in that hot air without any water or anything to drink, and as I talked, I got to where I couldn't hardly talk anymore.
The third AFVN network broadcasting component is television. Its chief is Army First Lieutenant George Lawrence.
The TV branch at AFVN receives 40 hours of shows from the American Forces Radio Television Service in Los Angeles. They are then packaged and shipped to the next upcountry station. We have 7 television outlets upcountry. They are Latrine, Tuiwa, Quinyan, Pleiku, Chulai, Da Nang, and Quang Tri. To back up this 40 hours, AFEN-TV produces several local shows and filler material. Local shows such as Nashville, Vietnam, Star Search, In Town Tonight, and Let's Speak Vietnamese, Poetry for People Who Don't Like Poetry, Insights, Information Specials, Interlude, The Circuit Riders, the last being a show to begin soon in cooperation with the McAfee Chaplain's Office. All these are put together in one daily program to give you, our audience, a professional television broadcast.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go.
This is the TV control room at number 9, Home Top 2. Its broad double windows look in the main studio. There, a choral group from the 1st Infantry Division is videotaping a musical interlude. Program director, Army Sergeant Dave Kramer, explains the action.
Okay, go ahead. Or so get the podium in there. Go around. Okay. Going around. Remember to avoid the piano players, Spencer. Okay, Rocky, you can set your focus if you haven't already done it.
You've just heard the videotape man counting down for the director, so the director will know when to cue the talent and when to make an edit in the videotape. You'll also hear the director telling his 2 cameramen on the floor how to move their cameras. 1 camera is a zoom lens, and he tells the cameraman to zoom in or to zoom out to bring the image closer or farther away. The director is looking at his 2 cameras in the control room through monitors. You can see just exactly what the 2 cameramen are doing. He also has 1 more monitor in there, which is a videotape monitor. You can see actually what the videotape man is recording. He also tells the cameraman to tilt, which is to move the camera up or down, or to truck, which is to move the camera across the floor. In the control room, sitting next to the director, is an audio man who cares about and handles sound reproduction, and a video man for picture quality. AFEN Television does about 5 live productions per week.
Okay, excellent playback for us.
That's AFEN as it begins its 8th year. Radio, news, TV. In this short presentation, we've cited all the others who keep us in the air, supply, maintenance, administration. But all of us are the American Forces Vietnam Network.
Headlining this hour's news, the 1st new terrorist sessions end in California mudslide 611 live. Good morning. I'm Army Specialist Jerry W. Gere.
AFEN, news on the hour, compiled from major American networks, wire services, and military sources. Now, complete details.
The news in Paris, the 1st formal session, the peace talks is over, and correspondent Billy Buchel is there.
As the 1st session of the substantive peace talks here in Paris broke up after 6.5 hours of negotiation, all the 4 participants in the talks seemed content, at least, with what had happened inside the old Hotel Majestic. If the length of meetings means anything, and usually it's considered that it does mean something, then the meeting today was probably a qualified success. Henry Cabot Lodge told us that he asked the North Vietnamese and the NLF that the PMZ, the demilitarized zone between North and South Vietnam, be reestablished. There was no reaction to that suggestion inside the meeting, but afterwards the North Vietnamese spokesman told us that North Vietnam already has rejected this idea because they think it's a smokescreen for American aggression. This does not mean, of course, that they will reject it as the talks go on.
And Ambassador Lodge also said he was ready to work out a plan whereby all foreign troops could be withdrawn from Vietnam. There was a lot of discussion on the shape of the bargaining table in Paris in the beginning, but not too much was ever said about the hall itself where the talks are held. Correspondent Leonard Redmont has that story.
It's the fourth opening of the Paris Conference on Vietnam. I'm speaking to the Grand Ballroom of the International Conference Center, the old Hotel Majestic, on the Avenue Kléber near the Arch of Triumph. This 60-year-old, six-story building was once Nazi military headquarters and then U.S. military headquarters. UNESCO used it, and the French Foreign Ministry took it over for conferences. By a curious coincidence, the first conference held here was on Franco-Vietnamese affairs in 1946. Outside are chestnut trees along the sedate avenue of business and residential buildings. This ballroom is about the size of a tennis court. The decoration is rather rococo. Gold sculptured gray walls with inset marble medallions, three glittering crystal chandeliers, and on opposite walls, two Gobelin tapestries representing Diana the Huntress with doves at the top. And I can see in the corners of the ceiling glowering hawks or American bald eagles. This is Bernard Redmont at the Vietnam Conference in Paris.
No relief is in sight in Southern California, where mudslides and floods have taken 11 lives and have done at least $5 billion in damages. The weather and forecast rain continuing through tomorrow. The victims were buried alive, with rivers of mud rolled down from foothills already soaked by more than 1 week of rain. Police report hundreds of houses have been destroyed or badly damaged. 26 railroad cars carrying detained fuel derailed today at Laurel, Mississippi. 16 of them blew up in a series of explosions that made a shambles of a 10-block area. At least 39 persons were injured and 30 homes destroyed in the explosions and fires. One 12-year-old girl is reported missing. It is the third such derailment in as many weeks involving the same Southern Railway train, number 154. Federal investigators are looking at that series of derailments. Secret testimony went on at the Naval Court of Inquiry about the loss of the Pueblo today. Skipper Lloyd Booker talked about the intelligence ship's mission and operation. Two of their witnesses also testified, all their testimony was marked classified and not released. Other Navy officers are expected to testify about the decision not to send air aid to the Pueblo, but it was surrounded by North Korean ships. In Santa Barbara, California, experts from the United States and Japan a stunning policy toward Red China. ABC correspondent Bill Brannigan is at the conference, and Brannigan says
there seems to be a new wave of movement toward trying to establish some sort of normal relations with Beijing, rather than the present isolated status of relations that Washington and Beijing maintain.
And that's from correspondent Bill Brannigan in Santa Barbara, California. The chief prosecutor in the trial of Clay Shaw, New Orleans, dropped a strong hint today. It was that he'll ask the jury to believe that the assassin of President Kennedy was not Lee Harvey Oswald. Assistant District Attorney James Alcock did the hitting while questioning the prospective juror. After 5 days, only 8 men have been picked to hear the fake conspiracy case against Shaw. Today's session was held in hopes of completing the jury, but no new names were added to the jury rolls. But that's latest news for the hour, compiled from Major American Networks, Wire Services, and Military Sources. I'm Army Specialist Jerry W. Gears for AFBN Radio News in Saigon.
AFBN Radio News. On the air 24 hours a day to keep you totally informed.
The automatic tone 0700.
Good morning, I'm Marine Corporal Rick Fredrickson with 5 minutes of news, compiled from commercial and military news agencies. The word is no again from Israel's Prime Minister Golda Meir to any peace formula from the big four powers. At Hebrew University in Jerusalem, Mrs. Meir said,
"It is only that we refuse absolutely that we should leave the world
Prime Minister Meir repeated that the ones to decide on the peace settlement in the Middle East are Israel and the Arab states. Former President Eisenhower's condition remains critical. Doctors at Walter Reed Army Hospital Center say evidences of congestive heart failure persist despite the fact that all the appropriated therapeutic measures are being utilized. But they say the 78-year-old general remains conscious and lucid and sleeps well at night. They refuse to say if he is near death. Nothing of his inherent stamina is recovering from major illness of the past. As predicted, President Nixon has asked Congress to extend the 10% income tax surcharge for another year. He says the surcharge is needed to put brakes on the economy and help the government pay its bills. Mr. Nixon also promised that Congress would be getting a package of tax reform recommendations from the Treasury Department sometime next month. Democratic leaders on both sides of Capitol Hill say Congress will approve a one-year extension of the 10% surtax. House Speaker John McCormick put it this way, "But President Nixon recommending it, my opinion is that it will pass." Senator Leader Mike Mansfield said he's sorry the extension is necessary, but he adds that there's probably no other way. Senator Stuart Symington is skeptical of the Safeguard missile system's value as a deterrent against the threat of a Soviet missile attack. At a Senate hearing this morning, Symington questioned Deputy Chief Secretary David Packard.
He would be the first to agree that if the Soviets decided the target was important enough to saturate it, whether it was Washington or Baltimore or Kansas City or St. Louis, that the city goes regardless of this ABM. Would you not?
Senator Symington of Missouri contends that the missile defenses currently deployed in the U.S. are sufficient to cope with any Soviet missile threat and that the Safeguard missile system is not necessary. The 14th U.S. plane to be hijacked to Cuba this year has landed in Dallas en route to its original destination in California. A Delta Airlines jet carrying 114 persons was forced to fly to Havana Airport yesterday and flew to Miami last night to refuel. In Los Angeles, the prosecution has opened its key examination of the key defense psychiatrist at Sirhan Sirhan's trial on the charge of murdering Senator Robert Kennedy. Correspondent John Davenport has a story.
Dr. Bernard Simon believes Sirhan was in a trance when he shot Kennedy, that Sirhan is mentally sick. Prosecutor David Fitz tried to force Simon to admit that tales of Sirhan's childhood traumatic experiences were exaggerated by him and his family to save him from the gas chamber. Several times I saw Sirhan become angry when Fitz questioned Simon closely about Sirhan's tendency to lie. Sirhan was still angry when court recessed at noon. The defense could rest its case this week. John Davenport at the Sirhan trial, Los Angeles.
Vice President Agnew last night talked about the problems of the cities. In Washington, Mr. Agnew said President Nixon's new Urban Affairs Council is an important change from the past.
Well, I think it's a very important departure that the administration is making in this respect. As you know, the Urban Affairs Council is not intended to be an operational agency, but intended to be more of a think tank or a policy-developing kind of enterprise.
Vice President Agnew said private enterprise will have to help the cities with their problems. I'm Marine Corporal Rick Fredrickson, and that's news compiled from commercial and military news agencies on March 27, 1969. Sports is next with Air Force Sergeant Ray Williams.
Driving a vehicle can sometimes be compared to falling off a log. You get so used to it, it becomes natural. Cruising down the road as your mind wanders to thoughts of home, your wife or girl at home. Usually a thought not actually on what you're doing at the moment. It's fine to daydream, but when you have a potentially lethal weapon under your control, you may just daydream yourself into deep trouble.
It's 2100 hours, and Russia reinforces its Mediterranean fleet. AFBN News compiled from commercial and military news agencies with Army Specialist Bob Lawrence. Good evening. The Soviet Union is reinforcing its Mediterranean fleet in the strategic Mediterranean area. Allied diplomatic sources say Russia has quietly massed 26 surface vessels and several submarines in the area. Defense sources also think Soviet ships and planes are attempting to shadow five French-built gunboats reported heading for Israel. The gunboats, with missile-carrying capability, could drastically alter Arab-Israeli naval balance in the eastern Mediterranean. Russian ships are reported spreading across the Mediterranean, continuing surveillance on the American Sixth Fleet. The Soviet Union moved much of its fleet out of the same area only 2 months ago, but experts say it wants to keep its Mediterranean sphere of influence, and it wants the U.S. to clear out of the area. Those five Israeli-manned gunboats traveling through the Mediterranean from the French port of Cherbourg should arrive in Israel today or later this evening. That's the expectation of some Israelis. Indications are the missile-launching boats passed south of the Greek island of Crete early this morning. South Africans have been put on notice against any attempt to speculate in gold. This came when the U.S. and its major trading partners announced agreement on a $35 an ounce floor for newly mined South African gold. The action came through the International Monetary Fund and applies only to gold mined in South Africa. Hot indications are it will effectively set a floor for the entire free market gold price at $35 per ounce. 2 weeks of work and rest confront President Nixon at the Western White House. High on the business side of the President's stay at San Clemente, California, is preparation of the State of the Union address he will deliver to Congress in January. Another assignment is a budget message that will follow his congressional speech. The chief executive appeared in good humor as he arrived in California today from the nation's capital. Some 3,000 persons turned out at the airport to greet him. Regarding the President's passage earlier today of the massive tax reform bill, Mr. Nixon had some comments on the whys and wherefores of his passage. We get a report on this from Hal Walker.
With the Congress in year-end adjournment, Mr. Nixon performed solo at the tax reform bill signing ceremony today, avoiding the potential embarrassment of having to invite the congressional Democrats who put into the tax bill more relief and less revenue than he had asked for.
The critical moment for this legislation came after the Senate had passed a totally irresponsible bill that would have led to a sharp increase in the cost of living for every family in America. The letter to the leaders of the Congress, I left no doubt that I would veto this bill. As a result, when members of the Congress met in to work out the differences between the Senate and House bills, the bill that came out of that conference was over $6 billion less inflationary for the next fiscal year than the bill that had passed the Senate. Seldom is any piece of major legislation fully satisfactory to a president. And this bill is surely no exception. I have signed it because I believe that on balance it is a necessary beginning in the process of making our tax system as fair as possible to the taxpayer.
Mr. Nixon also pledged that he will submit a balanced federal budget for next year and will take whatever action is necessary to do so. He did not specify what that action will be, leaving open both options of new taxes and reduced expenditures. Clearing his desk of other pending matters, Mr. Nixon then signed into law the Coal Mine Health and Safety Act of 1969 and a $69 billion defense appropriations measure. And he and Mrs. Nixon climbed aboard Air Force One for California, leaving behind a cold and wet capital city. Al Walker, CBS News, the White House.
Vice President Agnew and Philippine President Marcos passing mutual compliments have conferred today in Manila. Mr. Agnew has left Manila to visit a Rice Research Institute and fly over the Bataan and Corregidor battlefield areas. And in the war in Vietnam, 1st Air Cav Division gunships and soldiers aided by tactical airstrikes and artillery accounted for 61 enemy killed yesterday in the action in three corps. Two Americans were killed, two wounded in those crashes. Vietnamese paratroopers killed 38 soldiers in an engagement some 83 miles above Saigon. Friendly losses in that action were termed minor. Through the hour, that's AFPN News.
AFBN News compiled from commercial and military news agencies with Army Specialist Bob Lawrence.
This is the American Forces, Vietnam Network. This is AFBN, serving the American fighting man 24 hours a day from the Delta to the DMZ.
with transmitters in Guangxi, Penang, Quanyang, Baikou, and Matrang, with the team network station in Saigon, Vietnam. The sun, the surf, the air, it all feels special when you spend your 3-day in-country R&R at China Beach. For 3 days, you relax, sleep late, and just enjoy. Put in for that 3-day in-country R&R and find out what China Beach is all about. It's 0700 hours. A skyjacking and a call for the death of the cosmonaut make news at this hour.
CFBN News, compiled from commercial and military news agencies.
Good morning. A man and woman skyjacked a Granite International passenger plane with 108 persons aboard today and collected $100,000 in ransom after forcing the plane to land at Monterrey, Mexico. The passengers and two stewardesses were permitted to leave the plane, but the pilot, co-pilot, and flight engineer were held as hostages. The local Granite manager drove up to the parked plane in an armored car and delivered the $100,000 to the skyjackers. The plane had apparently received clearance to take off for an unknown destination. This was reported variously as Trinidad, Cuba, or some other port in South America. The plane originally was on a flight to San Antonio, Texas, from Acapulco, with a stop in Mexico City. The three Russian cosmonauts who died aboard their spaceship Wednesday morning apparently were killed by a sudden depressurization of their cabin and a fatal rise in their blood pressure. This was reported tonight by Western communist sources whose identity cannot be disclosed. They said this was decided by a Soviet government medical commission after a two-day inquest into the cosmonauts' death. The sources said the spaceship's landing cabin was damaged slightly during its separation from the orbital compartment. They said a tiny hole was created in the cabin wall. The hole became enlarged when the craft's braking rockets were fired immediately before the space trio began their entry into the Earth's atmosphere. The larger hole caused a sudden depressurization in the cabin and a fatal rise in the cosmonauts' blood pressure. A train carrying a group of children on an excursion has derailed near Chester, England. CBS News correspondent Adam Rayfield has details from London.
A day of the scene became a day of horror for a train full of British schoolchildren today. Two of them are reported dead after their train was derailed in a deserted station in northern England. At least four more children are seriously injured. Many others who were injured have been rushed to hospital. At least 30 children have suffered minor injuries. The train was an excursion special. On its way home to Crewe, 150 miles north of London, after a day at the seaside in North Wales. Through a deserted station at Wimbledon, the last two cars were derailed, and two children were trapped in the wreckage. The two who have since reportedly died. These are initial reports only. The whole picture has yet to become clear. At the moment, a major rescue operation is underway. This is Adam Rayfield for CBS News in London.
Defense Secretary Laird ordered the Rand Corporation today to surrender custody of all classified documents in its possession. His action follows the leaked newspapers of a top-secret Pentagon study on the Vietnam War by Dr. Daniel Ellsberg, a former employee of RAND. RAND, a private think tank, performed secret research for the military under special contract. It also had withdrawn today its special access to cryptographic information, intelligence, and nuclear weapons design. Despite the tightened security in action, it is not expected to restrict RAND's operations severely. RAND President Henry Rowan said in a statement he supports the new security precautions. Elsewhere in the news, troubles already for the new postal system and its head, Wynton Blunk. UPI correspondent Jim Lounsbury has the story in New York.
The new United States postal setup has already run into a whole lot of trouble. Employees have turned down a $750 million pay raise offer, and two postal union locals in New York have voted to authorize a strike later this month. A strike would be illegal under the new setup. Black postal workers don't like the personnel policies of the new setup, and more trouble is coming from mass mailers who are trying to force new postal rates down. Congress was not too happy with Wynton Blunt, the Postmaster General, so they decided not to vote all the money Blunt requested. Mr. Blunt says that may force a raise in third-class mailing rates. This is Devon Berry of New York.
The government reports there was a drop of 0.6% in the unemployment rate during June. The White House termed it a very significant improvement. But the figures also disclose that actually the number of unemployed increased by more than 1 million. There are now, according to the report, more than 5.5 million persons unemployed. Democratic National Chairman Lawrence O'Brien says it's the highest total in 10 years. He disagreed with the Nixon administration's assessment of June being a good month in employment. An official of the United Mine Workers Union has charged advance notice of inspections is being given to mine operators. As Dr. Lauren Kerr put it, there's evidence mine officials are being forewarned 6 to 24 hours of a federal mine health inspection. He made the statement in Washington at a hearing studying the Bureau of Mines enforcement of coal mine safety laws. Many of the nation's highways are clogged with motorists bound on outings over the long July 4th holiday weekend. The National Safety Council estimates that between 520 and 620 persons might be killed in traffic accidents. Finally, spectators watched horrified as 59-year-old Rosanna Hamer drove her car straight through a wire fence. It somersaulted three times down an 80-foot cliff near the Bournemouth Seaside Resort in England. The vehicle landed on its wheels and slowly turned over. She crawled out, straightened herself, and said, "Where's my purse?" This is Air Force Sergeant Jim LeRoy, and that's AFBN News to the hour.
AFBN News, compiled from commercial and military news agencies. The Dow Jones closing stock averages. Another feature of the American Forces Vietnam Network News Department.
Dow Jones, first all markets at a glance. Well, the story today was lower in light trading on both stock exchanges. On the big board, the average New York Stock Exchange share gained just 1 cent in very light trading of 9,960,000 shares. Bonds were steady, and U.S. government bonds were steady in quiet trading. On the American Stock Exchange, an average share of 3 cents, trading with 2,310,000 shares. London stocks were firm, cotton futures were mixed. Chicago grain futures closed down 1 to up 3/8 of a cent. Corn down 1/2 to up 1/4, oats down 3/8 to up 3/8, and soybeans down 3 1/4 to 4 1/2. It was a very even break on the big board today, with 679 issues moving ahead and 640 in decline. The most active was RCA. It closed at 35 5/8, down 5/8. Reynolds Metals at 26 was also down 5/8. AT&T 45 1/4, down 1/8. Commonwealth Oil Preferred 25 3/8, down 5/8. Warner Lambert at 74 1/2 was down 1 3/4. Eastman Kodak at 75 1/8 was down 1. General Telephone and Electric Corporation, 32 1/4, up 3/8. Case Manhattan Corporation at 49 3/4, up 5/8. Georgia Pacific at 48 1/2, up 1/2. And Martin Marietta, 21 1/8, down 3/8. On the American Stock Exchange, Burroughs Southwest, closing at 29 3/8, down 1/8. That was the most active issue. Then it was Hillenbrand at 37, down 1/4. Gould Incorporated Warrant, 10 3/8, up 1 3/4. Techstar at 7 3/8, down 1/2. Tier 1 Imports at 38 3/4, down 7/8. And General Battery at 27 3/4, down 1/4. We don't have the Standard & Poor's final figures today, but we do have the Dow Jones. The closing stock averages for 30 industrials. Down 2.84, closing at 890.19 for the week, and we won't be moving that figure again until Tuesday. 20 transportation items up 0.57, 15 utilities down 0.23, and 65 stocks down 0.38. Time for a few business items. Probably no surprise, more companies declared extra dividends and more resumed dividend payments last month than in any June since 1967. This reported from Standard & Poor's today, whose final figures on their stock averages come in just a little bit late for this broadcast. We've been phoned for it, but the girls went home early today, so that's why we don't have the Standard & Poor's. General Electric Company has joined the exodus, announcing today it will build a headquarters in Fairfield, Connecticut, and move 500 of its 3,400 employees in New York City to the new site in mid-1974. The story I read today question that there still could be a zoning problem, but this story sounds like GE is quite sure they're going to Fairfield. A 100-acre tract near the Merritt Parkway out that way. At this time, we're from Mutual Financial Desk in New York.
The Dow Jones closing stock averages, another feature of the American Forces Vietnam Network News Department.
From New York, Yvonne Guinadon is the new queen of tennis, winning the women's single title of Wimbledon on center court. And the manner in which she won was spectacular.
The Pentagon devastated my record in 63 minutes, 6-4, 6-1. This record was never in the match. At 28 years old, 9 years a senior of her opponent, and normally a slow starter, she never had a chance. A monumental surprise, Yvonne Dulagon took it in this manner, for her inexperience against top competition was the only question mark about her chances. But she looks like the seasoned player, and this victory should establish her as the one to contend with in coming years. Meeting her press later, Ms. Dulagon, though she won the French championship recently, admitted she didn't think she was ready for Wimbledon.
Well, she's a little surprised because her and her
of July 1971.